At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. And it's time to talk about the offense from the Falcons game, that second preseason game. I'm going to do it here with Jason Smith of Huddle It Up Films. Jason, how you doing?
I'm doing okay, Ken. How are you? I hope everything's been good on the channel. It's nice to be back on.
Yeah, it's great to have you back, Jason. Always a blast talking football with you. Finally got to meet you in person, attend a ball game with you, baseball game the other day. And the Orioles, let's see, did they get it done that day? Yeah, they did.
They sure did. 4-1. Nice quick game.
Yeah, so it was one of the recent non-disappointments. Unfortunately, we're doing this show after the Mets have just walked it off against the Orioles 4-3 in a game where the umpire had an awfully significant contribution to that effort. But we'll let that ride for a moment. Let's get back to the Ravens here for a minute. And I think that after watching the offense in that game, my concern isn't with the running backs who didn't really post good stats. It certainly isn't with the quarterbacks who posted outstanding stats, despite not tremendous protection. My concern is with the offensive line. How about you?
For sure. And, I don't know if anything in this game necessarily changed my outlook on the offensive line for better or for worse. I'm just kind of down on the line overall. And I think most fans, if you ask them what's your main concern and they follow the team closely enough, it would be the offensive line. I mean, sure, would I like another weapon for Lamar? That would be great. Defense is going to be good, at least, you would think so. It might not be as dominant as last year just because last year was so awesome from a defensive perspective. But they have to figure out this offensive line. They're going to have to play well because – their main two weapons are standing directly behind the offensive line. And you want Lamar to be at his best. You want Henry to be at his best. And it's just a lot of inexperience up there, Ken. And, if you can be a fan of Voorhees, you could be a fan of Faalele, you could be a fan of Rosengarten and really believe in those guys. But when you're talking about first-year starters, there's going to be mistakes. I mean, there's going to be plenty of them.
Lots of mistakes are possible, and they made a ton of mistakes in these first two preseason games combined among the three interior guys. Of course, Linderbaum not being there does not help the situation. If you're talking about organization, things being done properly, it's not like Linderbaum's never made a bad snap. He made the snap into the end zone that turned into the safety in the Rams game last year, but Cleveland's was a special kind of bad in terms of the players not all being set. He just thought he heard something that he didn't, and it happens. I think Linderbaum should settle down some of that inconsistency, and honestly, hasn't really been penalties for this group. It's just been crappy offensive line play. We're going to get into that in the second half of the show with individual scoring for each of the five primary linemen in this game. But let me just pose it to you as a question. If they're starting the season, if the next game starts the season, who do you start with at both guards right now?
Well, I mean, it seems like they have their heart set on Voorhees at left guard, so I'll go with them on that. I don't see practice, but you'd have a hard time convincing me that Ben Cleveland isn't the best option at right guard. I mean, again, I'm not at practice. I don't know if he falls asleep in the meeting rooms or if they don't like something about him off the field or work habit wise, but you know how much I grind the tape and have a really good feel for the offensive line. And Ben Cleveland hasn't gotten steady playing time. And despite that, whenever he's been in there at either guard spot, he's performed well. And, it's not just me. I talk to other film guys and across the board, it's what do you think about Ben Cleveland? Well, he's done fine or he's done well. It's somewhere in between there. It's never he's got a lot to work on. Ben Cleveland just naturally blocks people. And, and he has his moments of dominance, which is what I question about Faalele, especially, and Voorhees, is for all that strength and all that size. Their leg drive, their leverage, very straight up and down players. People talk about Ben Cleveland's stiffness, but I've seen Ben Cleveland collapse lines. I've seen him collapse nose tackles. And through two games, I haven't seen much of that from Faalele and especially Voorhees.
Yeah, Voorhees, I've liked what I've seen from him as a run blocker, actually. It's the pass blocking, and it's really down to the anchor. And unfortunately, that's the thing. You don't know if it could be fixed. The guy's 6'6". He's a big, tall, lean lineman. It seems funny to say about that guy who looks kind of like him, but he's very top heavy in terms of his of where his body. He doesn't carry it in his rear end, in his glutes, and his thighs like you want a guard to do. And it's not natural for him to play with a really low pad level. It just is, you know, John Simpson was kind of built the same way, built like an offensive tackle. And he was a guy that it was, he had a lot of difficulty with pass rush, with balance, with all sorts of things. Voorhees, he's going to have to figure it out. He's also got shorter arms. That doesn't help the situation when, you know, defensive tackles are getting the body on him. In some ways, that could be worse than even with an edge rusher, although edge rushing is certainly you really favor length players. But he's had 35 pass blocking snaps so far, and as I count them, and PFF has different integer scoring, but they have tons of downgrades for Voorhees. He's got 7 pass rush events he's been party to already, and that's an unacceptable percentage. And it simply has to get better. So amount of good run blocking is going to fix that.
And it just goes to show you that, bench press is not a great indicator of play strength, because this is not the strongest player in the NFL to come out like his bench press record. Like you said, lower half. And that's where, I just did a cut up this week. Been a very popular video. It's Voorhees' snaps. And, you know, what I see is waist down. It's leg drive. It's his feet being stagnant, Ken. And I don't think that's helping. And it's lack of bend. Like, it's hand placement and other things like that. I see some areas for improvement, but it's not something that I'm tremendously worried about. It's that I don't know if his processing is quick enough to make up for his feet right now. So if you're not processing well and you're not moving your feet well, it's going to cause you problems, especially in the pass blocking aspect.
Yeah, but he's already shown up to have some processing issues, which, by the way, I could live with that if that was the problem, if the anchor was okay, if he had some recovery ability. But the stunt and twist pickup that he's had has not been good. Also, it's been just another facet of the problem. If I look back to Linderbaum's rookie year, that was one of Linderbaum's big problems. It was also getting overwhelmed by big men, but he had a lot of problems with stunts and twists. I think that part will come. I just have to hope that he can have some of the Linderbaum magic in terms of improving, dramatically, hopefully during the first year, not waiting till year two, as a pass blocker. Cause right now throw your arms up in the air watching him trying to flail away at guys opposite him. Did face Ororo in this first game?
He did. Rook Ororo got him once, at least. I think the second time was somebody else, maybe not.
It's twice by Rook, once for the sack and once for a loss that the ball was out quickly anyway.
So, like that guy in the draft, he reminded me a lot of Matabike play style wise. In any event, Ken, getting back to your original question, I just wanted to make one point. The other thing that bothers me, Ronnie, obviously mobile lineman, Linderbaum, mobile lineman, Rosengarten, mobile lineman. And then it's like you're going to have two guys in the middle of all that are going to maybe hinder the outside zone run game. Some of the climbing, I noticed that they asked the left tackle Josh Jones to climb. Like, we had to really change our scheme. Faalele was asked to pull, and instead of it being a kick out block, it was a shorter pull. I'm like, man, this doesn't look like the run schemes that we've been running. And you have a back now. Well, Derrick Henry, he can run any. I mean, he's great in the outside zone too, but I don't like having guards that are just going to weigh this line down and not make it where we're going to be boxed in to run certain plays, certain running plays.
Right. I'll say this about Faalele, and this will come up again in the second part when we get a little deeper on this. I don't think he's too slow to run typical zone schemes, because I don't think you really are ever running at full speed on a zone scheme. I think the problem with him is processing when it comes to that. I think the problem with him is it's an outstretched arm, outside arm you want in a zone scheme to try and make sure you can impede the guy from crossing your face. He's just not good at playing with his hands. I mean, just it's just not what he does. I mean, it's frustrating as hell. I had Crawford on the show, Michael Crawford at Abukari, by the way, great follow, over the summer, and he was espousing an offensive line coach who really believed it was the right thing to do to not commit your hands as a blocker. And I'm going, okay, first of all, I don't really subscribe to that. I think you really do need to fight with your hands. But more than that, at the very least, you got to have a couple different pitches in your arsenal. You got to be able to go to the armpit sometimes and end the rep right there. You know, Falele is a very strong man. He has things he could do with you know, tightened fists around some jersey of another player. It is really disruptive if he punches and connects. He's got to do it. He's got to just actually do it. And it just does not seem to be able to process the desire to punch or be able to pull it off very often.
Exactly. And, you know, last point to that is that's a huge part of it. And the processing, like you mentioned, and so is also, you know, like you're not running full speed outside zone, not close to it, but you do have to be able to react and change directions.
Yep.
And if you're processing slow and you see somebody shoot a gap, you have to use your hands, like you said. You have to move your feet so you're not holding on the play, and you have to see it coming. So, you know, Voorhees, I thought, was pretty good at USC on those kind of things. But I think mentally right now, he's a little bit it's going to take him some time.
Yeah. And it, by the way, if with a player like Falele, it should be if you cross his face in zone, it should be at your own peril. He should be making people be punished, be on the ground, be pushed way towards the sideline, whatever it is, when somebody tries to cross his face. He just doesn't make anybody pay for this. He's terrible at it. So anyway, I'm thoroughly frustrated. I don't understand what the Ravens are really trying to do. If there is a game being played in terms of motivating Cleveland to be a better player, the time is now to flip the switch and give him the reps he needs at right guard to start the year there. Cause I'm like you, I'm sure he's one of the two best guards on the team.
Sure. I mean, it's hard to convince me otherwise. And I think that the other guys, with how inexperienced they are, I mean, Falele at guard, Voorhees, 25 years old, I think 26, never played an NFL snap. Look, Ben Cleveland's got experience. He's been dependable when you've had him in there. Let's start with him and let the other guys earn it.
Yep. Yep. With you all the way. All right. So the other question is if Linderbaum can't go in the first game for any reason, who do you start at center there?
I think that depends on what they want to do at right tackle. Mm-hmm. It may depend, or that would play a hand, or who's the first man up off the bench, that kind of thing. But I actually thought that Cleveland looked okay at center. His snaps actually were great, you know, aside from the bonehead, but his snaps got there really firmly. No rainbows. I mean, you know, belt high. I thought that he did fine. But I think that whether they want to play McCary there or not would have to do with where else they want to use McCary.
Right. I agree. And I one of the things they've gotten is some decent play out of Josh Jones. And we'll come back to this in a little bit. And you know, he looks like he could be a decent backup tackle. Maybe, you know, it'd be fantastic. It just maybe slightly below the league average as a backup tackle would be absolutely great. I mean, the Ravens coaches would be jumping up and down cheering. So should Ravens fans, although they'd probably find a way to complain about it. You know, if Ronnie misses time and he comes in, he plays the way he did in this last game versus the Falcons.
And you know, if Josh Jones is good play, frees McCary up to put out a fire somewhere else. That's another great thing, because now McCary isn't the only versatile lineman you have. Josh Jones can play at least four out of the five spots, you know, to different ability. But being a backup left tackle is a heck of an asset.
Yeah, and that's really, they need to have at least one guy who's fixed in that role, I think. So I wouldn't want to move around. I certainly wouldn't want to be playing both McCary and Jones at other positions, and then guarantee yourself a switch if you're doing that. I think they've really done the right thing, by the way, recently in basically stopping any Jones at guard stuff. He's playing pretty much exclusively left tackle as far as I have seen, and some right tackle too, but exclusively tackle. And I think that he can help the Ravens most there. And I think you nailed it in terms of McCary's versatility gain being the big edge there. And boy, We just heard news from today from Harbaugh at the podium, who says he's right on schedule. And they didn't say right on schedule for what? Didn't say right on schedule to play the opener. Didn't say whatever. But talking about Linderbaum, he's right on schedule. And the Ravens really desperately need him back. All right, let's move on. Talk about the backup quarterback role, because we had a real good quick game from the quarterbacks, despite, you know, meh protection in this game, with 21 out of 25. Guys were throwing the ball deeper down the field. Does Josh Johnson have the backup role sealed up at this point?
Absolutely. I think that they had that in their mind going into the offseason in the first place. I think they want the experience there. They want somebody who to not mess it up. And, you know, when comparing Josh Johnson to two rookies, that's what you're getting. You're getting the ultimate experience quarterback against two guys that haven't played. So, you know, my side note conversation on Josh Johnson is this, Ken. I think last week his performance was a little overblown by it being a poor performance. I mean, Harbaugh alluded to the receivers not running the correct routes. The timing of everything in week one preseason was pretty horrible. So, you know, when you saw Tylan run a good route, Josh Johnson hit him in week one. When you saw Keith Kirkwood run a nice little bang eight slant type route, Josh Johnson made the throw. And then in between it was a lot of chaos. So this wasn't I think that Josh Johnson got a lot of heat unnecessarily last week. And, you know, he wasn't as bad as he showed last week. And maybe he's not as good as he showed this week. I just think he's a good backup. He's a decent backup.
I'm sure both of those statements are true, by the way, because they're two extreme performances. But I'll say the one thing that was consistent each week was something I really don't like about Johnson's play, is that he's not comfortable in a clean pocket. And the guy left the clean pocket twice to end drives in week one. Sack, one is a sack zero, and the other was a run for two from the 5 yard line, where the sack doesn't matter. I mean, you just hosed up your chance to basically score a touchdown by leaving a clean pocket. And I'm really upset by that. This last week, you know, there's a clip going around about an incorrectly tagged pressure for Rosengarten, clearly an ATS pocket, by the way, 3 second pocket anyway. Rosengarten didn't maintain his block. He allowed the player to disengage, which is not an error really at all, honestly. He's just trying to reset his feet. And we had Johnson stray outside the pocket to the right, basically to put him at an enormous disadvantage in that situation and create a problem. The pass still got thrown and completed, I believe, but the you know, whether or not that was a pressure or not was being discussed. Johnson's just has a fairly regular problem with that. While Lamar is much more able to keep his eyes down the field. I think Johnson has some of that, by the way, his ability to keep his eyes down the field. It's just he has feet where he seems to need to move and roll when you got a clean pocket. And that can be very destructive. And this, so far, it's nothing about his passing that I've really thought has been a problem. It's been moving when he didn't need to.
Absolutely. I've seen that too. And yeah, the play that you're talking about, I think I know exactly which one. I mean, Rosengarten had great position on the edge mm-hmm. rusher or whoever he was blocking. I mean, you want to keep that guy from getting in the pocket. And, you know, Josh Johnson basically rolled out to, you know, where Rosengarten couldn't block the guy. Sure, you want to stay engaged, but you also, there was no need for him to start holding and grabbing, considering the position Rosengarten had him in. So yeah, stuff like that. And I mean, if Lamar does that, then he's out. I mean, he's out the gate, and guys are running to try to stop him, and it creates more opportunities for receivers who are getting left because everybody's worried about Lamar. So totally different styles, but, you know, overall, Ken, I don't get caught up in the, we need somebody who can run like Lamar. I want somebody who can throw like Lamar. Yeah. Passing game's just too big of it. I think that people saying, well, we need the style quarterback like Lamar Jackson. To me, it's like, okay, well, that'll help the running game, you know, the read option. You get more out of scrambles, but if the guy can't throw, then what are you doing? You know, like we need Lamar Jackson has a big time arm, can make every throw on the field. I want a backup who can make the throws. And, you know, we saw with Huntley, very similar to Lamar as far as his running style, but I mean, really, it was a lot of 5 yard hitches, 7 yard hitches with Huntley, and really
totally changes the whole field.
Right, it changes the whole field, and the defenses are sitting on it. They know they only have to worry about 10 yards in front of them.
Yeah.
So that's one of the things I like about Josh Johnson is, I mean, he's got an NFL arm. I don't think it's a cannon, of course not, but it's not a weak arm either. And he can make those mid-range throws on time. So, you know, a lot of people are, you know, want to upgrade the backup quarterback position. To me, I always had the, you know, feeling that if Lamar goes down or misses time or misses the playoffs that, you know, it's kind of over at that point. I don't think you're going to go through Mahomes and the rest of the AFC with a backup, no matter how good the rest of your roster is. So that's just my personal philosophy. I know a lot of people disagree and I understand their reasons for it. But to me, if I'm going to invest money, it's not going to be in Lamar's backup.
Yep, I'm with you. Certainly wouldn't put, you know, $10 or $12 million there. I might put 3 or 4 or have the guy on speed dial that's going to cost me that much money during the season. So anyway, they might need to actually go to the phone to get their guy if Lamar has like a 4-game injury. But there's a sweet spot in there where you still might make the playoffs and you hope to get Lamar back. But that actually that's kind of a hard exacta. Or maybe even a trifecta, depending on how many things have to actually hit within the zone. It's really not that likely that it would happen. The Ravens would have to, you know, be dominant enough before Lamar went out that they could withstand a bad 3 or 4 game stretch, and then they have to also get Lamar back in terms of the playoffs. I mean, it's unlikely for the stars all to align. And you're right. Are you going to spend, you know, 3% of your cap or 4% of your cap to try and cover that specific risk? There are probably better expenditures available.
Right, to try to win one game in a unlikely 3 or 4 game stretch, to win one more game,
one more game.
And you would have with somebody else. I just the odds of it, and like you said, the percentages is why I'm there. Of course, I want the best at every position, but you know, I'd like to upgrade elsewhere.
All right, let's talk a little bit about, well, one thing I just mentioned a little bit, emphasis on pushing the ball down the field in this game was clearly, I think, a discussion during the week, and a point of emphasis, we'll call it, that the quarterbacks were not doing enough of it. Emory Jones didn't get a chance. Look, he fumbled on his only snap against the Eagles, and you know, he's dropping back and obviously probably holding the ball too long to try and get a throw down the field. This game, he didn't have a problem at all with that. His A-dot was good, his over 8 yards a throw, so no problem in terms of what he did. It was still a big problem for Leary, and it really doesn't become a big problem for Leary until you look under the hood. Leary had 1.4 A dot in the first game. In fact, he was petrified of throwing interceptions, is how I would describe his play. In the second game, he seemed to have a better A dot. It was right around 8, but most of his A dot, most of his depth of target was accumulated on 2 balls that were thrown a mile high and out of bounds on the left sideline in the final 24 seconds of the first half. Those don't count. I mean, they just don't count for purposes of really trying to make big time throws. He gave up on both of those basically. And that, you know, is what fuels that pretty significantly higher A dot. He needs to really cut it loose and make some big time throws down the middle of the field or, you know, wherever, but in the field of play, where he can try and score some significant points. He's at this point, I'd say he's on the outside looking in. I think he'll be on the practice squad. I don't think the Ravens will carry 3 quarterbacks as it goes right now. I think, you know, one of Emory Jones or him is on the practice squad. I think, you know, it leaves them free to pick up somebody else's guy. But where do you stand on that in terms of the quarterback situation?
Clueless. To be quite honest with you, now, I'm not going to sit here and BS you. I really don't have a good feel for it. I don't know if there's a difference between Leary and Jones. Like I know Leary was drafted for a reason. I totally believe 100% that Coach T. Martin was the reason. You know, that was T. Martin's guy, like Harbaugh alluded to after the draft. There's something that they like about Leary. I love his arm. I mean, he's got a live arm. But I have no feel for it. Like, this would be a situation that I would ask someone like yourself, who's been out at practice, who's seen things that I can't, because the game script for Leary has been very, very odd when he's been in there. And then, you know, Emory Jones looked very competent, looked very good in this last game. So is there a difference? Is Leary that developmental guy that they want to keep around? Has he consistently been up before Jones? And has there been a clear marker that he's ahead of Jones during camp? Has he looked better than Jones during camp? Or is it more of a wishy-washy situation? Like, you know, nothing in the preseason has told me anything about what the Ravens intend to do with the third quarterback.
All right. In terms of order of entry, in practice, there's no doubt about it. Leary's getting way more reps than Jones. So we'll start with that. And Jones is often struggling to get in at the end of each period where they'll have several consecutive 11 on 11s. Lamar gets his, Johnson gets his, Leary gets a shortened one, and Jones often gets one snap or the whistle gets blown right as his group gets to the line of scrimmage kind of thing. I mean, just he has not had many chances at all. In the game, I think this has been a little bit of a different situation. I think they really tried this last game. They put in Leary at the end of the first half. By the way, good situation for Leary to try and move the ball at the end of the first half. That's a show-me situation for him to try and get into field goal range at that point. And he had his chance, and he did not convert it. And then they brought in Jones. And Jones, first of all, I think it was a good thing to do just because Jones had the awful, one-play experience in that first game. And they also gave Jones a chance. And, hey, Jones showed out. 7 of 9. It wasn't perfect or anything. And if you really peel it back, it's a 4 victories on 9 or 10 plays passing, because I think he got sacked once too. But it was a solid effort. And, it's a great passer rating. And it had one fantastic play that was really Dayton Wade made the play. But he put the ball right on target to him. I just think that they did a good job in terms of trying to give Jones a situation that was a winning situation. And the Ravens, they had the lead by 3 or 1, or what did they have the lead by when he came in? It might have been tied even when they got the touchdown to Wade. So they really gave him a real game situation. With a Leary, they gave him game situations, particularly in the game where they had to come back with a touchdown against the Eagles. He led a 15 play drive on which they had 10 runs, 5 passes, and his 5 passes went a net of 6 air yards. So, just night and day difference between what the two of them have done with their opportunities so far in the games. And in camp, Leary's certainly getting more opportunities. I wouldn't say he's really showing out or anything over Jones. They're both throwing some picks. They're both not looking perfect. So,
Okay. I appreciate that because, like I said, zero feel. And, I'm not afraid to hold back on my opinion, but if I don't have an educated one, I'll tell you that too, Ken.
Hey, appreciate it, man. Let's move on. We talked a little bit about the quarterback position. The order of deployment was very clear in this game, but we'll talk about the order of deployment at other positions. At running back, Henry and Hill still getting rested in this game. Owen Wright, first running back up. And he is very clearly taking the lead over Ali. I sent you like last week's order. So I've got this, but Collier was the second back. Okay. Ali did not play. So he's lost a lot of ground. He had a very poor first game in pretty much every facet. Owen Wright had some trouble running the football in this game. I blame a lot of that on the offensive line, a lot of bifurcated backfields. But he clearly has the edge for that third running back spot right now.
Agreed. When I looked at Owen Wright, he strikes me as somebody that they can trust in short yardage situations. He almost seems like a Derrick Henry handcuff. And I don't mean that to take away from Justice Hill. I'm just saying that some of the runs that they're going to ask Henry to do that they would not want Justice Hill to do. There are some runs between the guards, between the tackles. Owen Wright hits the hole hard. He wasn't done any favors. There's been some short yardage situations that he's been thrust into over these first two games where the blocking up front is getting pushed back. So you can't go off of his pure stats, his yards per carry, stuff like that. What I see is if there's a crease, he's going to hit it. He's going to hit it hard, much like Gus, and take somebody with him for a yard or two after contact. And I do like that about Owen Wright. Also had the touchdown catch. Mm-hmm. Which was good to see because a couple other passes to him were incomplete. Ken, some tough tries for Owen Wright on those other two, but he just seems like a very, very steady player, and it might take Ali some time to develop. I like Owen Wright, and I think Collier's been right behind him as far as like preseason play.
Yeah, he has been, and Collier, I love his style. I love the way he sticks his nose in, gets yards, fights like hell after contact for yardage. He's been good from my perspective in that. Has the speed to get outside, can work through a small hole. He's really their small hole back this year. Ray Rice used to have some of that, by the way. That was a characteristic that was positive about him. But Collier is a I really like him as a back. I think he probably could be offered a practice squad spot, and a lot of it's going to depend on whether or not Ali clears waivers. So Ali, I'm going to say right now it's about a 75% probability he's cut, and that'll be another fifth round draft pick that they've cut, by the way. And when that happens, I think there's a fair number of teams that scouted Ali, might like, you know, who he was in college, and will go ahead and take the shot and make a claim on him. So it might be they have to trade him. Might be the other possibility. But if it doesn't, if they sense the cut is not going to work out with him falling through the practice squad, or they decide they have to trade because of that, or if it just doesn't work out for whatever reason, a team claims him, then I think Collier ends up being the top practice squad option for this team, and they may have their eyes on another player on some other team as well. But I don't think he'd be a bad one to be your, you know, reserve third back.
I like Collier's physicality. Saw some special teams. I haven't studied the special teams, but he showed up a couple of times, returns, kick returns, coverage teams. He's a physical guy, man. Like, I could see him being somebody that the coaches like and the coaches can depend on to not, you know, look, we can make you active on game days because you're pretty darn good on special teams. You're one of our best 11 special teamers in this unit and in this unit and in this unit. So Collier strikes me as the kind of guy that they would want to keep around the practice squad. Owen Wright, like I said, like we've seen the last couple of years that there were runs for Gus and there were runs for Justice Hill, and they were pretty specific in that. And Owen Wright seems like the guy that if something were to happen to Henry or if, you know, that kind of thing, maybe Henry's just gotten a bunch of work in the first half. We want to give our third back some care, some run, that there might be situations and defenses who are vulnerable up the middle, that Owen Wright might be a better pick than Justice Hill to play on first and second downs on some of those drives. So I do like Owen Wright, a no-nonsense type guy, and I can see why the Ravens have him running with the, our running back three, you know, for sake, where he's the RB3 on this team as he's been coming in the game.
So, what you're describing is exactly how Gus Edwards got his first chance to play, came up off the practice squad, had that huge game versus Cincinnati. There's one point in that game versus Cincinnati, by the way, where the Ravens at the 3 yard line, he ran for a touchdown. They were down 8. So he ran also for a 2-point conversion to tie it. And then he had to run out and try and cover the kickoff. Didn't you know it's possible to get THC shipped right to your door? Mood delivers premium 100% federally legal THC directly to you. I'm talking about delicious, high-potency gummies, top-shelf flower, home-baked cookies, vapes, anything you'd find at a dispensary, you can now order online and have it shipped quickly, discreetly, and conveniently right to your door. And every Mood product is made from pesticide-free cannabis grown on America's best small farms at prices that won't destroy your wallet. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code RAVENS. So head to mood.com/ravens, check out their online dispensary, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code RAVENS when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. And instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI on Unlimited Ultimate and Watch or Tap, also on them.
Service plan required for Watch or Tap. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's like, couldn't you find somebody else for that third straight snap? But he went out there and he was on the coverage unit as well.
His Munkin did that to Flowers last year a couple of times too. 70-yard bomb. Now let's throw two bubble screens to Zay Flowers around the goal line. You remember that? It's like, man, can we give Zay a break? I know he's a rookie and young, but my goodness. Yeah, that's always funny when that happens, a poor guy.
They really fed the offense through him, that's for sure. Okay, let's move on. Let's talk about the tight ends a little bit. Obviously, likely and Andrews did not play. Andrews still did not practice today, by the way, which is a little bit of a concern. Harbaugh says, no problem, very minor injury, no problem. It's on there. I don't want to make light of what he's telling us, but since there's only one speed to that record in terms of what's going on with particular injuries, you really, until he's sure the guy is lost for significant time or has to have surgery or whatever, he's fine. He's going to be back any day, you know, blah, 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 you know? So, I don't like asking injury questions at all. Let's put it that way at camp. Anyway, Andrew's out again today for whatever reason, however serious, whatever. But he does say he's going to Green Bay. And whoever the reporter asked about the injury also followed him up to say, is he going to Green Bay, by the way? And he goes, you should be. Harbaugh said, you should be a prosecutor.
Right.
You're asking a follow-up question like that. You know, obviously he wasn't going to Green Bay. Everything wouldn't be all right kind of thing. Well, you know, there's a little bit of history there in terms of some bad information on injuries. Anyway,
it's true. I mean, and as a head coach, you want to be as provide as little information as possible, and as a reporter, you want that information. So I understand it. I think for the most part, Harbaugh gets a bad rap on that. I mean, you know, I want to know selfishly as a fan, but at the same time, I don't want my opponents to know as somebody who wants the Ravens.
Also
as
a fan.
Also as a fan. Right. So, you know, he could tell me, I won't tell nobody, Ken. I won't tell anybody.
There you go. You'll go with that answer. I'm just fine. Let's not talk about injuries at all. Let's not bring it up at all. If that's going to be the case though. Kolar got out there, started the game at tight end. We were supposed to see Scotty Washington, I think, but he ended up playing two special team snaps, no snaps of offense. My theory is he got hurt sometime before the game, maybe tried to play special teams for two snaps and said, I'm out for this one. There wasn't a problem with practice that I noticed. He was active they don't have inactives and inactives. They just have DNPs among the 90. And then he effectively was a DNP for the game, DNP on offense. And the guy who was out there before him was Reigerman. So he was out there with the starting group, and then they put in Ishmael and Sharp to play together for most of the second half. It's just a kind of a weird situation to see Reigerman. One thing about that tight end group they did, though, is a lot more 12 personnel groups. So 25% in the first game, I think they're up to 35 or 36% in the second game. Probably more of a concession to what's going to happen during the season and maybe something to kind of get the mindset of 12 personnel going, even if it's for the other nine players on the field.
Sure.
In terms of what they're all
doing. You know, Reigerman, I guess he's listed as a tight end, but
tight end fullback.
He looks like a fullback to me, you know, so I'm glad you categorized that as 12 and not 21. But yes, you know, I do think in one of my long term thoughts and got challenged by our buddy Voss on this to be able to talk it out, which I really appreciate. I know you do shows with Voss in the morning, mm-hmm. Or the morning GM and all that. But, you know, I really think that early in games, Ken, I'm talking about first drive, second drive. Every game this year that you put Mark Andrews and you put Isaiah Likely out there to see how the defense is going to match up with that. Are they playing it light? Are they playing it heavy? Okay, if they play it light, can we bring these guys, condense them into the formation and run Derrick Henry into this lighter personnel group? If they play it heavy and they want to bring in an extra linebacker or a big safety, and we can throw to Andrews or Likely or whoever it is, you know, spread them out. But I want that information as a coach or a coordinator early in the game. How are they going to deal with two tight ends as dynamic as Mark Andrews and Isaiah Likely? And I was really impressed with Likely's progress as a blocker last year, because in year one, it was like, man, he's really limited, maybe even a liability in the blocking game, even move blocks and all that. Just to see Likely competent and being able to get the job done gives me faith that they can move him around and him and Mark around in different variety of ways. So I'm glad to see the 12. I Voss's argument to me, Ken, just by the way, is that having two tight ends on the field would limit the amount of route combinations you could run. My argument to him is that Zay Flowers can run every route. Bateman can run every route. Likely can stretch the seams. We've seen Mark Andrews run a variety of different routes, so I don't think it hinders it that much. If he had like a clear possession receiver who couldn't go deep, I could see it, but I don't see what area of the field you couldn't threaten with those four out there.
And if you have Likely and Andrews on the field, your possession guy, who you might be Aguilar, say, is probably not going to be on the field on that snap. You're probably going to have probably will have both Flowers and Bateman and also Henry on that. I don't disagree with that. I think that one of the things that the 12 maybe could be a problem, and there was somebody who had a concern about 12 personnel who did a show, and I'm honestly forgetting who that was, which is bad, but it was he had, you know, good thoughts on the topic, is that the defense is allowed to get more compressed with 12 personnel. You can do more things about trying to decide who you want on the outside covered on an island, who you maybe want safety help for, deciding how you want to deploy against 12 a little differently and maybe not have the same kind of defense of every blade of grass. I think there is something to say about that, that it could reduce Henry's effectiveness as a runner. But I think that overall, all offensive schemes have weaknesses in some component. 12 sure. has its own set. So you're trying to probe at the defense's weaknesses to your personnel. They're probing at, you know, what they can put on the field to probe your weaknesses as an offense. And, you know, the ultimate player who gives you 11 people who have to be accounted for instead of 10 is Lamar Jackson.
So exactly. What I would say to, oh, well, we got two tight ends, we have to condense the formation. Why would that be? We're able to condense the formation. That's a strength. That's the strength of the two tight ends. You can easily spread those four out and have Likely and Andrews in the slot and go spread formation with two tight ends on the field. That's the advantage that I'm talking about. So I don't see that as a knock. I see it as a positive, you know?
All right. All right. Great stuff. Kadir Ishmael has been a player who's been a lot of fun to watch in camp, by the way. He has not really shown up in these two preseason games for much, but he's knocking people out as a blocker. He looks like Darren Waller to me as a receiver, you know, a tall, lighter tight end, brings a lot of athleticism to the position, former quarterback, then a wide receiver, now a tight end. And looks like he could be a player in this league. I don't think there's room for him in this roster unless the Ravens are going to make an enormous move to cut Charlie Kolar. I don't see that happening. But he is a guy that may not make it through to the practice squad, or if he does, might not last more than a few weeks there until attrition starts to burn away at tight end depth across the league.
Yeah, good for him. Very proud of him, of course. A little more invested in interest in being Kadri's son. But yeah, I think we're pretty set at the tight end slash fullback spot with Likely, Andrews, Kolar, and Ricard being those four guys, all locks and not much mystery after that.
I'm with you. And if they lose another Travis Vokolek this year, that's just probably is the way it has to be. Wide receiver, talk a little bit about the deployment today. It was interesting. Cunningham hold on, let me get my sheet here because I've got the wrong notes up here in front of me, and that's been annoying me the whole time we've been doing this. But for the very first series, yeah, Cunningham was out there with Wallace and Kirkwood. And so Kirkwood, first to be deployed, first to leave the game. He did so in the second quarter. Same with Wallace, who left at the same point right after the touchdown. They each contributed with some big catches. We'll talk about them, no doubt, in the second part of the show. But the interesting guy in here is Cunningham, who, frankly, hadn't had a great preseason to date. I thought had a pretty freaking great game on Saturday.
He can make you miss. That's what I learned. He's got some pretty darn good body control near that sideline, too. Stay in bounds. I thought that when he didn't get the ball, he ran some sharp routes. I found myself focusing in on Malik Cunningham and wasn't planning on doing it when I was watching the tape. And I'm like, is Cunningham in there again? Yeah, there he is in the slot. Let's see what he does. And was consistently impressed. He has that, like, it might take him a little bit to master it. I'm sure it will, but the ability to get on a cornerback's toes quickly and to get in and out of breaks quickly and to possibly make somebody miss you know, if he gains some separation. I like all that about Malik Cunningham, and I hope that he ends up staying on the practice squad or in some capacity after the roster cut down.
So he and Kadir, I would say, have both had kind of like some ball magnet ability, I would say. Wade also, by the way, in practice. They get the ball a lot, particularly on those second team reps. The guy who's gotten frustratingly few targets so far is Tez Walker. He's a fourth round pick. He was a touted receiver in this draft. You know, a guy who certainly had one of the really good pedigrees. He's the only guy who beat Wiggins for a big play the entire year. He's had a continual problem with some sort of rib cage injury that's been sidelining him. Availability is awfully important. I would have guessed if he was to be out, it would probably be a soft tissue thing, but what's happened is he's gotten beat up a lot on non-contact plays. And the reason this is, he's not suffering non-contact leg injuries like you sometimes see. He's getting hit by defenders. Christian Matthews has been guilty a couple of times. He's not the only one. Somebody else rolled over him on the sideline in the last time he was really hurt. And then he got hit again during the game, in the first game, I believe. And he's just suffered a series of injuries that obviously is very frustrating, probably for the coaches as well.
It's a shame, because if you asked me, you know, before training camp, okay, look, I can give you one guy to have a great training camp. Who would you want it to be? And I'm thinking, all right, well, who would it be great for the team? I don't need likely to have a great training camp, because I know what he would. It would be Tez Walker, because the upside with him, the boomer bust, being able to take the top off the defense. And, you know, when he comes back to get a ball, any kind of comeback route, there's issues. I mean, there's extra steps. It takes him a long time to gather and change directions. But people see that, and they say, well, he can't run routes. And that's where I push back, because any kind of one cut routes, Walker showed me that he was really good. So if you run in a 7, an 8, an in cut, anything where you just stick your foot in the ground once and don't have to completely turn around and come back to the quarterback, he's very good on. He gets a little bit extra push, like a base runner pushing off the base. He's very good at those one cut things, and he can track the ball well. And he can adjust to the ball well, and he'll go get the ball for you. So, man, I really wish it would be the opposite story, where Tez Walker is getting like the James Prochet type hype, because we could really use a weapon like that in the regular season.
Well, he's a 7, 8, 9 guy all the way. And in college, the thing I remember about his tape is he's just not at all a natural decelerator. And you just said all this, by the way, I'm just going to say it a little differently. He doesn't really sit in the chair well.
No.
Okay. And you watch Bateman get to the top of a route. He knows exactly how to do that. In practice, you see Bateman on the side in practice. He's constantly practicing deceleration and reacceleration techniques, like a great right route runner does. Walker, it's just not part of his game yet. If you really understood the deceleration, if they could really get him fixed in that way, which I think, by the way, is going to take an off season with a wide receiver guru to really get him to learn the dance steps of deceleration again. Whatever he did, he really learned it wrong. Because even in college, when he was a much more dominant athlete than the players around him, he wasn't good on comeback routes. Okay, and that's the really big fear about drafting him, is you have a guy who does not have the basic complementary route for the 7, 8, 9, which is any kind of really good comeback route. Derek Mason, he had it in spades. And it meant that even a guy with limited speed could still run deep routes and be effective doing that, because people really feared and sat on that little 10-yard comeback from an atomic arm like Flacco, who could get it to the sideline very quickly and it just be an easy first down. They really, you know, had a good thing going there. But Walker, in order to make his 7, 8, 9 effective, he's gonna have to learn to decelerate again and break the bad habits that he's got.
Sure, and you know, with him having his speed, you know, he doesn't have to be Rashad Bateman effective.
Sure.
He's going to get an extra yard. The cornerbacks are going to turn their hips a little earlier because of his speed. So he doesn't need to be this quick Derek Mason-like route runner on comebacks and hitches and stuff. He's just got to be competent. And he'll be able to hit on some of those, because guys are going to give him space.
Yeah, and honestly, I think all he needs is one complementary route that he can run really well. So just you got to maintain the deception that it might be either when you get to the top of the stem. You can't sell it out early. You can't give it away and, you know, open up your left hip at the as a batter as a right-handed batter like you're trying to hit a home run on the swing right away. You gotta not give it away, and that's a bad example. But the pitcher.
And Ken, one other point that I really before I forget, we're talking, you know, some higher level route running stuff, and we're on the same page. But there's another part of this too, and it's the finding space in zone.
Yep.
The broken plays, and he's not getting any time to show us. Can he run an over route, Ken? You know what I mean? It ain't about quickness or deceleration or anything like that. Can you find the right space, take the right angle, make yourself available to the quarterback? And, you know, he looked pretty good with that to me, with the North Carolina quarterbacks who are aren't too shabby themselves. You know, Drake May looked fine with that. But I would have liked to seen him with Lamar get some chemistry going on, man, so we could get some confidence to use him.
That has been an ongoing problem, is that he really hasn't been playing with Lamar that much because he's not really in that group yet.
Yeah.
So, that can be a super frustrating thing for some receivers who can't build chemistry. Just ask Isaiah Likely in terms of how long it took him to really get to play with Lamar more. Let's talk about the rest of this wide receiver group, though, as it got deployed. Kirkwood, I thought, pretty good game. We'll talk about him individually the second show. Isaiah Washington was in there only for the very end. Let me get to a couple others here from my sheet here. Ryan is a guy who he's in his second year, spent the entire year on the practice squad, played from the end of the second quarter on in this one. Unfortunately, I think he might be getting to the end of his time with the Ravens. I think he'll probably be on the practice squad because they still like him as a contested catch guy. Guy high points the ball very well. Doesn't have really special route running skills. I think it's all about, you know, what he can do to not get tackled and to go up and get a ball. And sometimes maybe you get behind a defense, but they've got other guys who can do that. And I'm a little concerned about Ryan's current spot on this offense.
Agreed, and he seems like a, a steady, consistent practice player. You know, maybe a 4A player, Ken. You know, very good in practice, very good, very steady, but not somebody that you really would like to have on the field throwing the ball in an NFL game.
Yeah. All right. Let's see. Gage came back to practice, by the way, today. Maybe he gets another chance. Anthony Miller is a receiver who's shown a little bit. He played in the first half in this game. I think he had one catch in this one. He was more effective. He's been maybe a little more effective than that in practice anyway. So hopefully he's a guy who is on the edge of the roster fighting. Harbaugh had a good comment about this today, by the way, when he was at the podium. He said, he was asked something about, do you really want to be still having a competition for the last wide receiver and running back spots, for example? It's something of that nature, and I'm paraphrasing, but I do always encourage people, go out and listen to Harbaugh's interview. It's posted out there, so if my paraphrasing doesn't match up exactly, this is still the feel I got from it. What he said is, I want to have competition at the end of the roster, and the reason is that's a hell of a lot better than having to be scouring the waiver wire for the guy right. You're missing.
So. Those are the words he used too, scouring the waiver wire. Yeah. No, I agree. I'm very, very interested. Something tells me that this is Russell Gage's spot, just based on his history in the NFL. Doesn't need a lot of time. If he's healthy and ready to go week one, he to me is the safest bet out of like the veterans they're brought in. Kirkwood looks good, solid. He's been in the league for a reason. Tylan's obviously a lock, you know, Tylan's yes. A lock. But when you're talking about Dayton Wade, maybe they, you know, we've seen it before where the rookie doesn't get the benefit of the doubt. And here we've brought in, you know, help me, Ken, three veteran receivers, maybe. Hardy.
Gage, Miller.
Hardy, yeah. Gage, Miller. Kirkwood, so that's four right there. Something tells me, like, out of those, if you looked and say, well, who's been the most productive pro? It's been Russell Gage, and he's done it in different systems. He stepped up certain games and been the wide receiver too. I remember for the Atlanta Falcons when they went through all their injury problems. There's Russell Gage, six catches today or five catches today and looking pretty darn good on him. So something tells me, and it has nothing to do with anything that I've seen or haven't seen this preseason, but if you ask me who the best receiver out of all those guys are for 2024, not for beyond, I would say Russell Gage. You know, he's a pro.
missed a whole week, missed the game, of course, missed a whole week, only had one opportunity the week before. It doesn't mean that he's out, and what we won't see at practice between Thursday's joint practice and the beginning of the regular season that will determine a lot if he's the guy. And they'll still be making roster moves, by the way. So even after the roster is set, Gage could still be, or he might be on the roster because they're saying, okay, you know, he'll be our guy. And then they may say he's not, at some point. I think a lot of it may be based on what they need in terms of type of receiver and ancillary special teams value. So if a player like Hardy were to go down, I think Wade is the obvious replacement because Wade can return kicks. Wade has a lot of the same kind of gadget play ability. And he's shown it. He's shown a variety of receiving skills in this preseason that I think put him at the top of easy replacement for Deontay Hardy. If you lose somebody else, if you lose your ex receiver, okay, well then maybe it's got to be Justin Gage. It's not an exciting choice, but maybe it's got to be him.
Or even if Tez Walker's not going to be ready, and that's gonna another. I could see Gage being that guy to be okay. Well, we got Nelson Aguilar and we got Gage. That'll give us our depth for Flowers and Bateman, somebody we can depend on and not have to go too far. And you know what, Ken? I would like to see as hot as he's looked, as good as he's looked, and I would love to see Tylan Wallace get a shot, man. Just get a shot. Just throw him in there. If Tez Walker, we want to go 11 formations and in 11 formation, and Aguilar's the starter in that, I would imagine, in training camp. Let's get Wallace some run in there and see what he can do, because he just looks better and better every year, more and more comfortable every year. Really proud of Tylan Wallace. It would not surprise me if his body cooperates, he would be like in this league for a decade. Special team player, solid, just good player.
Yeah, he could be that. He could be like a Kelly Washington type player.
Or Chris Moore, Chris Moore that left. Right.
Is Chris Moore still around somewhere, right? Panthers or someplace?
He was last year. I don't know about this year, but yeah, he was last year. And again, special teams ace type, core special teamer, fourth receiver type, fifth receiver. I could totally see Tylan being that either here or somewhere else. But look, he's been so hot in training camp in these games. I wouldn't mind him seeing him getting two or three targets week one or something, and just have him be in the rotation.
It'd be cool. I mean, a lot of people were projecting Aguilar for 15 to 20 targets for all of last year, and Aguilar ended up not only completely reversing the narrative about who he was in his career. I mean, first of all, tremendously inconsistent receiver, obviously had a crap for quarterbacks at New England the last 2 years. Okay, 2020, he was a great receiver with an average quarterback in Las Vegas. And then you get to 23 and you're thinking, well, does this guy have anything left in the tank? Why are we picking up a guy like Aguilar? I was, not nonplussed by the acquisition entirely. And then he turned out, just had a career year all of a sudden and was absolutely fabulous in terms of his success rate, in terms of the high catch percentage. It was incredibly surprising. And then throw in that the fact that you learn these things about him as a leader that were different, including the going to Lamar in the huddle and wanting to peel off the safety so that you can get, I want to see Tyreek Hill, but you want to get Flowers free for the touchdown against the Rams.
I remember that. I think it was week two against Cincinnati. He had that big fade to the corner, a slot fade. Seemed like Aguilar has really good chemistry with Lamar.
Yeah. He'd definitely been an extended ball player that's been very good. Okay, we'll call it there. The offensive line, there weren't a lot of surprises. I guess I'll go very briefly through this. So we had Jones and then Pearl at left tackle. No surprise at all. We'll talk about Jones's play in the second half. Pearl's not a factor. He's a measurements player at left tackle, as I say, as opposed to a measure of bulls player. Then we saw Voorhees. Manning, a guy who I like, but I think took a step back in this game. We'll talk a little bit about him. And then Dalcourt at left guard for the last drive that had any real playing time to it. We saw McCary for two series at center. I'd like to get your opinion on this, but do you take anything from the fact that they waited to put Cleveland in for two series of McCary, or not really concerned about that at all in terms of what it means for Cleveland?
No, not really concerned at all about Cleveland. I think they want to get McCary's work at center.
Yeah,
and maybe maybe that's a sign that they want to see Cleveland at guard here eventually. soon, not eventually, but soon.
And then Samak was the last guy who came in, but Samak bumped up a spot on the totem pole. That was actually a significant move for him, worth talking about here, because Dalcourt was ahead of him in the order of entry. Harbaugh got asked about that today. He referred to some injury that none of us knew had occurred, but apparently that was holding him back. And Samak actually played very well against the Eagles, which there weren't a whole lot of linemen who played great, but he played very well against the Eagles and really showed up. And it appears that the script has been flipped again, and Samak is now ahead of Dalcourt. I still think it's going to be difficult for the Ravens to keep two pure centers on a 9 or 10 man offensive line.
I mean, look at our draft picks from now, the fifth round to one. Ken, I think you caught every single one of them in this show. Aside from Sanusi Kane, just making jokes with you, but seriously, it's very unlike the Ravens to cut draft picks. They did it last year with Caillou Kelly. They probably should have did it last year with Saleh, but that's another story I'll save from my soapbox. Mm-hmm. Getting back to the original point, Samak, he needs to. I would like to see him against better competition. The fact that he was behind Dalcourt really surprised me last week. Maybe it's injuries, but I kind of see that as, look, if he's healthy enough to play, he's healthy enough to play. Why is he coming in so late?
Well, my theory is that Dalcourt was really ahead of him on the depth chart. And the reason he was ahead is because they were fairly much indifferent to the two at center, but Dalcourt was also had the versatility to play guard. And I think carrying two centers on a 10-man offensive line roster is kind of like carrying three catchers on a 26-man roster.
I mean, and you have McCary that can play center. You have Cleveland that can play center.
Yeah.
So, right. Yeah, yes.
All right. Right guard. We'll just talk about very quickly. Falele was in there for a long time in this game into the third quarter. Then Corey Bullock came in, and he hasn't played badly. I don't see a spot for him on the team. Even with the thinness at guard, they haven't really moved to give either him or Manning a bigger shot at moving up on the depth chart. So if you're really unhappy with Fa'alele's play, you might have given one of those two a chance ahead of him. If you're really unhappy with the way Voorhees is pass blocked so far, they seem to be unhappy with it, but they seem to, it seemed to also indicate that they're stuck with it. Then you might give either of them a chance ahead of Voorhees, but it hasn't happened so far. Or you try either of them at center. Try it out everybody but the freaking security guard at center already.
I mean, Ken, I think it comes down to they know that Voorhees and Falele need the reps. They need as many reps as they possibly can. So, I kind of agree with you. I don't think – unless maybe Saleh's gone and they want to keep like Tayshaun Manning around or something like that as the third, fourth guard, however you want to say it. Because, luckily we do have some functional versatility with Josh Jones and Cleveland and McCary. But there's only so many spots. I think that, Falele playing in the third quarter doesn't say anything about who's coming in behind him. It says everything about Falele wanting them wanting to get a good look at him, get him the experience as well.
Right. Right. Well, I'm with you on that. At right tackle, we saw Rosengarten for a good long time. He's been splitting time with McCary, coming in behind McCary. And now he basically was the right tackle exclusively in this game for all the snaps that they kept there. Regular offensive linemen out there in this game, or they're real contenders for the offensive line. And then we got two series of Saleh and one series of Simpson, which was long enough for him to get a penalty. Those guys, honestly, Saleh and Simpson, I don't see any spot for fairly obviously Saleh. Whatever guard tackle versatility you want to ascribe to him, and he did play some guard in this game also, I just don't see it as helping his cause enough to make the team.
Yes, I don't want to pour on Saleh, and I'm sure he probably has some fans, but like I said, I'd seen enough in the pre-draft process. I'd seen enough in the preseason, and the fact that he could not get snaps in a meaningless Week 18 game against Pittsburgh, there's been nothing that I've seen that says that he can – he doesn't do anything at a plus level, strength wise, movement wise. There's nothing there that I don't see any pro qualities to his game is the most polite way I could say it.
Right. I think that's fair. I won't say what I was otherwise going to say. I want to stay centered on this, but we'll come back for part two of this. We'll have more discussion. We're going to get into some individual offensive line scoring. That'll always take a long time, I know, because we tend to dig into that at a high level. But Jason, really love having you on the show always. Tell folks where they can find your work.
Sure. Huddle It Up Films on YouTube and Twitter. It's time for the channel to get back active again. So I've caught up. I mentioned the Voorhees caught up. Did one on Owen Wright. Ajabo is what I'm going to work on after we finish here tonight. Just letting you see them putting cut-ups in a manner and not taking 10 minutes to explain two plays. Letting you see this time and time again so you can make your own judgment about what you see about the players. And I love the comments that we get. We have multiple discussions going on now about, you know, not only Voorhees, but people were noticing Rosengarten and Falele. So a good time. I encourage you to follow the channel through the football season and draft season.
So I would encourage you to follow Jason on Twitter too, at Huddle It Up Films. Great interactive follow there. And his content for the videos is really worthwhile as well. I'm always available for his show when he wants me because I love talking football with him and he's a good friend as well. So Jason, we'll get back to you in part two of this show. I want to just say other folks out there, if you wouldn't mind doing the show a favor, the best favor you can do is show it to someone else. Tell somebody else about Film Study, the podcast. Get them listening to it in their car. If the person's older, they're not really used to podcasts or they're resistant to podcasts, have them play it directly off their computer while they're at work. You have my permission to do so. Doesn't necessarily translate to your boss, but you have my permission. Jason, really appreciate having you on.
Hey, thanks, Ken.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.